My name is Sharzad Kiade. Welcome to Fam for All Moms. Who are you?
I am. I thought you were going to introduce me. My name is Susan Yara. I am the co-host here for Fam, and we're excited for you guys to join us for a new episode of Fam for All Moms.
Yes, this is the little sis of one of our dear friends, Dinah, and she is a child psychologist. And we're live. No, we're not live. You just told me we weren't live. So, Christina, I'm so excited. I've met you. I've went to your, I think, 30th sexy secretary birthday party. And that might have been the first time we met a couple years ago. Yes. At Dinah's house.
Well, it was a do-over because when I was 30, I was pregnant. So it was like my 31st, but I pretended it was my 30th.
Oh, good. So this is Dinah. You guys, if you follow the Fam YouTube channel, you've seen Dinah Trout on our channel. This is her little sister, Christina.
Hello.
And I'm so excited to chat with you. And she just had a baby.
You look incredible. What? You look like you've actually been sleeping and stuff.
I know. How are you?
Oh, well, he is 8 weeks old. So he's, but yeah, I guess that counts as just having a baby, right?
Yeah. I feel like I say I just had a baby and my youngest is 3 and a half. I'm still losing the baby weight. I just had him. No, 8 weeks is your, yeah. And this is your second. And she had a cross country move in the middle of all this. So you're busy, girlfriend.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just moved to Massachusetts. I don't know if you can see, it's like raining, but
no, I see trees nice. And green, and it looks so pretty.
Yeah, I love it here. I really do.
Oh, good.
Well, so you're okay. You are a child psychologist. Is that what you are?
I'm a school psychologist. So it's a little bit different with like the training, but basically I work with children of all ages in the school setting specifically.
I am always so fascinated with this kind of a profession because, you know, a long time ago, I worked with a nonprofit called Boys Town.
Oh, I love Boys Town.
Yeah. And, you know, one of the big things, one of the key things for them was learning how to work with children on a psychological level and with behavior. And that was like a key way that they would work with these teenagers who were considered at-risk teenagers because, you know, a lot of the time it was like just taking a step back and like looking at it and being like, okay, wait. They've never been taught, you know, what's right, what's wrong, why, and like kind of digging into that psychology of it. And once I started to really learn just like some of these little tips, right, like on how to work with children and thinking of it from that psychological behavior, it felt like it changed my world. It was like so eye opening. So I guess like explain to people what that means, like what you do with kids.
It depends what kind of school I'm in and what they need me for. But I guess the primary thing that I do is just help any kids with like social emotional needs or possibly academic needs or both. A lot of times they're tied together and one kind of impacts the other. But basically I'm there as like the mental health professional for the school. So I help the kids directly, but I also help parents with kind of, like you said, like a little bit of education about behavior and tips for things to do at home to deal with behavior management or relationships or anything like that. So I kind of work with, I tie the school with the family. I tie them together a lot. So yeah, that's the majority of what I would do in general.
You know, as parents, we're not thinking about, this comes up like even in just like one of our other podcasts that we recorded with Elizabeth, mm-hmm. where we don't really think of kids as
people.
Yeah, like they're having their own like mental struggles or like the things that they're thinking about and what they're going through and stuff. And if we just take a step back and realize it, it might make it easier to work with them if you can get on their level.
Like acknowledging their feelings, basically.
Yeah.
You know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, and I think as a parent, because we raised them from the beginning, we almost identify them as part of ourselves. And there comes a point where they do become their own separate person. And I think that happens a lot sooner than we are able to adjust to.
Yep. I'm not ready for you to be your own person.
But I feel like the way that the biggest thing I tell my parents and even myself is like, the more independence you can give them and identity you can give them and give them the illusion that they're in control is like the basics of how to make them happy. And you know what I mean?
Yeah. This is something I'd love to dive into with you is like creating independence within your kids and when you should start that and what are some activities you can do. And also like if you have an older kid, 6 or even 10, is it too late to kind of shift? And what your thoughts are.
I mean, I think the first thing, and I have to remind myself of this all the time, is we have to let go of our agenda and give them space to make mistakes. And this takes time. And I think the biggest thing getting in the way is that we have an agenda and we have stuff to do, and our children sometimes get in the way. And that's what hinders their independence. Because think about like putting their clothes on, for example. It's so much faster if we do it. Mm-hmm. And it takes forever for them to do. And of course, they put their underwear on backwards and then they put their shoes on the wrong foot. And it takes a lot more time and patience to walk them through all of that. But then I think the payout is obviously in the long term better. So I think the biggest thing to teaching independence is we have to build time into our day to help them through those kinds of things. And factor that into our schedule. Like if you're rushing out the door, it's probably not the best time to teach them how to do something with their outfit.
Yep. You know? Yep.
But if you have that extra time, it could be a good chance to quickly be like, oh, do you remember what shoe goes on what foot? You know, just throwing in those like mini lessons. I'm talking about shoes a lot because I'm going through that. My daughter's three, so we're doing like the shoe thing a lot. But I think it can start whenever you feel like they're ready. And I mean, there's never, the worst thing that could happen is they just can't do it on their own. And then you know that you still have to support them. So there's never really any risk to letting them try to do something on their own, other than just like our fear, I guess.
This episode of FAM is brought to you by OxiClean. You guys have heard us talking about our love for OxiClean, especially during the pandemic when I feel like we're home so much more, which means, I don't know, for us, we're playing in the backyard, we're getting really dirty, and that means I have never-ending laundry.
It's just stains on stains. It's like the more time we spend at home, the more stained everything is. And it's not just the laundry. I feel like, well, I'm the person that chose like white furniture back when I didn't have kids, and now that's really catching up to me. So, you know, I love using OxiClean because OxiClean is one of the best stain removers I have ever used. It's like you can use it for your laundry, you can use it for your rugs, you can use it for, you know, anything like our outside patio furniture. It's just a really versatile stain remover.
There's hardly a clothing stain that OxiClean Versatile Stain Remover can't tackle. You guys can harness the power of oxygen to get tough stains out.
You can clean bathroom tile and grout. You can remove carpet stains. You can clean outdoor patio furniture. We use it for all of that stuff. So you guys have got to try OxiClean Versatile Stain Remover for yourself. To work your magic with OxiClean, go to oxiclean.com/try me and order a free sample. You guys, it's a free sample. That's oxiclean.com/try me, T-R-Y-M-E, for a free stain fighting sample while supplies last.
This is what my husband, Michael, and I have gotten into like little annoying arguments about in the morning, like pre-COVID. The morning was like a tornado in our house, getting kids ready and, you know, dressed out the door. I wanted my kids to learn how to get dressed on their own. I mean, they know how, but I wanted them to do it. I wanted them to like have that thought and that independence to go in their room and pick something out and put their clothes on. But the morning rush was chaotic. And so I found like Michael was always just doing it for them. And I'd be like, they can do it themselves, you know, like angry and firm, but like trying to be sweet in front of the kids. And
right.
It was something that just like it, I noticed it bugged me. I want my kids to do shit themselves. And of course, like you said, it's faster if we just do it on our own. Or do it for them, but then they don't learn anything. And I started laughing because the morning rush of the circus act of getting ready was always just such a shit show. And it's not the right time to teach them how to put their shoes on when you have to be in the car in 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So
it's
factoring,
a total shit show.
Yeah. Factoring in that like extra 10-minute window, or it's something you do after school. You teach them how to do their shoes.
On the weekend when you're in pajamas most of the day and you're finally changing, you know, them into like a regular outfit, that would be a good time. So you do have to be realistic with yourself. Like, we're not all able to do it when they're on their way to school, but if you want to like start with a weekend or a time where you can do it, my daughter starts school next week. So And I'm a little nervous because we've been very lax about the routine. And I've been doing a lot for her just because of the baby. You know, there's a lot I'm trying to like juggle. I was going to just do a picture board for her. And I took pictures of her doing different activities and put it up like on her door so she can start understanding like, okay, I can go to the bathroom and get dressed or and come downstairs by myself. And if she has like pictures of it doing it, I feel like she might be more into it.
Yes.
Somebody else told us about this, actually. I was just going to say,
who was it, Catherine?
No, it was Conscious. Catherine. Yeah, Conscious Parenting. Yeah.
She was saying like something about having a visual sort of guide. Is really helpful for little kids to just sort of understand what is, I don't know if expected is the right word, but what they, you know, are encouraged to do or something.
Right. And they like being independent. Like, as you know, when they can do it, they're so proud of themselves. So I feel like they like that because then they can come down and be like, I did it myself, you know? And obviously you want to give them some kind of reward for following it. Like if my daughter can get dressed and eat breakfast and we still have a little time, I might let her like wash the iPad or something.
Yeah.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
You know what's okay. Say? So you said you have a 3-year-old. We both have 3-year-olds. 3 has been the hardest year. And I think there's a lot of psychology that goes on behind it. Because like the first 2 years, yes, they're independent. They want to be independent. They are their own like people. But at the same time, they kind of like go with the flow easier. But at 3, that's when they really put their foot down and they're like, nah. No, bitch. Mm-hmm. I am not doing
it. I want to see Nikaj talking smack to you.
Nikaj,
I want to see somebody put you I mean, in your
his,
place.
His thing is, at 3 is he has learned that screaming gets to me, to like not just me, like to my husband, to everybody. Like it's not even a tantrum, it's just a pure scream.
Sorry, I'm laughing.
Like that has become his thing. So like I guess that's like the equivalent of his tantrum is he just starts to scream at the top of his lungs. But it's like, so how is it, like how should we be thinking about what he's thinking about so and, that like, we can diffuse the situation?
Is he doing it because he just wants something and he's doing it to break you down?
This is yes, but he's figured out that this works in all cases. And I've done the whole, like when he starts to do it, I've asked him to like, you know what? Like, I get it. I've tried to like take this route, right? Where I'm like, I get it. You need to let this out. Sometimes we all need to scream. Like you're allowed, like, why don't you just hang out in this room and scream at the top of your lungs and come out when you're ready. And like, that just doesn't work because when he's screaming at the top of his lungs, he's not doing it so that he can let things out. He's doing it because he wants your attention, whether that's like because he doesn't like what you just told him that he has to do, or it's because you are busy and he literally just wants your attention. It's like it's screaming at the top of his lungs has become his 3-year-old thing. I haven't figured out how we stop him from doing it. Because if I turn around and tell him, like, this is annoying to everybody. Nobody likes screaming. Like, nobody likes when you're screaming at the top of your lungs. Like, I'm also, because that's what he's chosen to do, it, like, gets you riled up, right? Because it's not like he's crying there and you feel bad for him and stuff. It's like, oh, my God, if an adult did this to me, I would punch this person in the face, right?
Right. Well, I think, well, first of all, they're master manipulators. So don't ever forget that.
True that.
And I think what I would do is acknowledge, because I think the reason they're screaming or they have a really hard time with emotional regulation. So they might feel something very strongly and they don't know how to express it. They're also very self-centered. So when you say things like other people find it this way or I don't like it, they don't get that. They're all about me. They don't care. I don't really feel like they're able to really empathize yet at this age. Maybe some like exceptional kids can, but I would say on the majority cannot, they're not able to do that. So, I mean, I guess what I would do is just try to talk through with them what exactly they're screaming about. Like, okay, I can tell you're frustrated or maybe you're angry. Is it because you want mommy to play with you? Or is it because you weren't allowed to watch TV? And kind of give them maybe like, because you probably know what the trigger was. You can probably kind of tell. And maybe give them like a choice of two situations. And then they might be able to realize like, it's because I wanted to do this and you didn't let me. And then you can maybe have a little bit more of a conversation about it. or not. And if they still have that reaction, you can say, I can tell you're this. I'm not able to talk to you because you're screaming. So I'm going to walk away. And when I come back, maybe we can have a conversation about it. So like acknowledge that they have a feeling, but don't necessarily engage if they're going to be out of control like that.
Like don't just start screaming back at them, which I feel like I've been crazed before and done that. I've also grabbed pillows and just screamed into the pillow. Because I have to let my screams out sometimes too.
Of course. Well, and I think that's a good tool to teach kids to do actually. Like if you know that it's coming from a place of anger, but I find for a lot of kids, they're screaming because they want you to give in somehow and they know it annoys you.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean about the difference? Like for them truly being upset versus like, I'm going to scream because everybody hates it and they'll finally give in to what I want.
Yeah.
Master manipulators.
Oh my God. I have tried to be like, it's cool. Like I'm like drinking my coffee and not looking at him while he's standing there like screaming like it's like an opera.
It's cool.
It's cool. And I'm like, oh my God.
And then you turn around after a minute and you're like, wee, wee, wee.
Yeah.
Shut up.
Oh my God.
But he can do it for like an hour. That's the problem. You're not going to like, you can't sit there and just ignore it and ignore it and act like it's cool. Like I know you're just getting this out of your system. After an hour passes, you feel like you might go and hurt somebody. You're like, wow.
I know. Well, I think, I mean, you have to kind of, I guess, take it, increase the intensity of your reaction for the, like, if it keeps going and going, obviously you're going to have to maybe get a little bit more, intervene a little more strongly. But I would say in the beginning, I think kids just want to be acknowledged and they do also need help to understand why they're having such a big feeling.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And that's part of why their reaction is so extreme because they don't understand like how to fit it in with their little brain, you know?
Mm-hmm.
You work with kids that are elementary age typically or older?
I work right now. Well, actually I'm all ages. So preschool all the way to high school. And mainly the kids I work with, I mean, it depends what setting, but mainly the children I work with do also have like an underlying disability or special need as well. So like, it's not just typical age appropriate behavior. It's also probably other issues coming into play as well, but it doesn't mean that it doesn't help everybody in the general population. But I think the kids I work with tend to be even more maybe more extreme than a typical child, like emotionally or behaviorally.
Mm-hmm.
So
what are some good, like, I guess, I don't know, red flags to look for if a mom thinks that maybe they need to get their kid help?
For the most part, I would listen to your teachers, or the people that interact with your kids on a daily basis. Because they're professionals and they see kids all day long. Every year they have a different batch of kids. And I'm sure you guys have noticed like every year there's more and more students that come in with kind of different concerns than maybe in the past. So I would always check in with people that interact with them the most and just ask them like, hey, they do this at home. Is it coming out in school or is it just kind of age appropriate and see how it impacts them? Because if they're able to keep it together at school and not at home, it's probably not as significant of an issue than if it's something happening like across their life and in all settings. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Well, because they say like the kids act up the most in front of mom, for instance, right? Because that's where they feel the safest to be themselves.
Oh, yeah. Oh, everybody loves, and they love to tell you, oh, they're so good when you're not around. Yeah.
I tell that to my sister all the time. I'm like, Rumi is literally perfect with me. She's an absolute perfect child. She doesn't cry. Why do kids do that? It boils my blood sometimes. All my kids, teachers, you know, from the beginning to you know, however long they've been in different school settings and stuff have been like, they're so sweet. They share all this. I'm like, they say they share. I'm like, oh, dust my ears, deceive me. Did you say my children share? I'm like, where's that fucking behavior at home?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think it's like, it's a social skill. Like we hold it together at work. We're polite. We do all these things, but it's exhausting. So when you get home, you of course just take it out on your husband.
That's true.
You know?
I guess children and adults are similar in that way.
Yeah.
Well, it goes back to them being their own person. Like you almost have to think of it, or I know for me when I'm really struggling with my daughter, I have to think of it as like, well, how would I feel if I was in this position? And forget the fact that she's a certain age, but be like, I probably wouldn't like this either. Or, you know what I mean? Like, really try to see them as they're a little person.
This episode of FAM is brought to you by ModCloth. And I can see, Shahrzad, you're wearing your fancy green velvet blazer.
I love it so much. You know, it's about time I treated myself. You know, yep. I'm all about that treat yourself kind of lifestyle. And I really wanted to get something new. And I wanted to get something from ModCloth. They have such a fun selection of vintage-inspired, versatile styles that make me look good. I mean, right? Hello. And and they make me feel good. ModCloth, like I said, I love playing around on the website because everything on there like just really speaks to me. So this particular green velvet blazer is something that I felt like would be very fun for the holidays as I wander around my house and take photos of myself. I wanted to wear this green velvet blazer so I can feel special because it's been a while, you know, since I felt fancy.
I agree. You deserve it. You deserve it. No need to validate it. You guys can also treat yourself and get a little outfit or a velvet blazer that you might like and make yourself feel a little bit more special these days. You can get 20% off of your purchase of $75 or more, including sale items, which basically means you're going to get it for a really good deal. All you have to do is go to modcloth.com, that's modcloth.com, and enter the code FAM, F-A-M, at checkout. The promo code cannot be combined with other offers. Again, that's modcloth.com and enter code FAM for 20% off of your order of $75 or more.
When you are working with kids, obviously, then you go and work with their parents. What are some of the tips that you give their parents to try to work with their behaviors or work with, like, it maybe not even a behavior, but use just something that you've noticed about them?
Well, with behavior stuff, I often do something called like a token economy, which sounds really official, but basically it's like a direct exchange of a little reward for the behavior that you want to see. So like, let's say you're working on getting them dressed in the morning, just because we were talking about that. For every time they could do that, they might be able to get like a little tally mark on a whiteboard or something. And then they can exchange those tally marks for something that is of value to them, like a candy, or I know these are things that are probably so passe, but I don't care. I'm all for the candy bribes.
I appreciate that somebody saying that. And it's, you know, cause I think, I mean, we did a star chart when I was growing up and it was like a certain number of chores and things you would earn. We would earn something. We would earn maybe $5 after like a month of chores or whatever it was. And then I've done that with my kids before, like a noticeable kind of sticker chart, and they get to do maybe a trip to the movie theater. Of course, as I'm talking pre-COVID when people could go to the movie theater or whatever it was, brownie or a cookie or a donut or something like that. And I think moms are, some moms, I mean, this is an option. People want to hear what other moms are doing to get their kids to behave well.
Oh yeah. I mean, everything in moderation and, you know, candy, iPad, obviously everyone has their own feelings. You have to do what you feel comfortable with, but it doesn't always have to have like a huge monetary value. It can be something really simple, or even like you get to go to bed 10 minutes later, or I don't know, you get to, we get to order takeout and you can get your favorite thing. I don't know, something like that. But I think the key is consistency and immediate response. So if they do something, you have to really respond right away, good or bad. You know what I mean? You can't bring something up that happened at the end of the day, whether it was a negative or a positive behavior. You know what I mean? You kind of want to address it right away. And if you can't, then you might have to let it go a little bit.
Yeah.
Same with rewarding them. If they do something that's desired, you do really want to try to reward them as soon as possible, even if that's just a little praise, you know what I mean? And then giving them the other thing later. I think that's really important, and to follow through. So if you threaten like, hey, if you do this again, I'm going to take away this, you really have to follow through.
That's huge. That makes a lot of sense.
So you also have to think ahead too, like, If we're going on a long car ride or we're going on the plane, I probably shouldn't threaten to take my phone away or right. like, you know,
I know.
Something yeah. that you know you're going to have to bust out later. So you almost want to think ahead a little bit, like, wait a minute, what am I really going to be able to do today as far as like, just be real with yourself.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
That makes sense. You know, so you were saying that you work with kids that have sometimes like special needs or other stuff going on. So I assume that's things like maybe having autism or like some kind of a delay in something. What are, you know, I think this is a topic that comes up a lot and parents are really scared. Right. Like I know, for instance, I was worried for a second that maybe my son might be autistic or something because he has a speech delay. And I wasn't worried about it until we had him at his, I think it was his 2-year pediatrician appointment. And his pediatrician was like, you need to get him help. Like he and she started like she had this different tone like to her. And she started asking me some questions and stuff. And I was like, like, what is she getting at with these questions and stuff? And so we had to go get him evaluated and stuff, and we got him a therapist and everything. And now he's, you know, doing well. And, but it's one of those things where it's like, I was scared for like a good year where I was like, okay, so do I need, like, what do I need to be looking for? What do I need to be aware of and stuff? And I think this is like an underlying, you know, topic that people don't want, they're like scared to address with their kids. Cause I even had like brought it up to my husband, I remember. And he was like, don't say that. And it's like, well, what do you mean don't say that? Like if he were, we would need to know how to like, how do we work with him then and stuff. So I think it's like knowing what to look for and then also like what to not be so paranoid about too.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that's huge. Cause obviously in my profession, I'm paranoid about my children having everything. Cause I've seen everything, you know, I think, you know, every like autism is just one thing or one issue that a child could have, but there's so many other things too. So you kind of have to look for different things depending on what it is exactly that you think might be going on. But I would say you always want to look for patterns, and it would have to be pretty significant and for a pretty significant amount of time. So like, you know, if your kid has a couple regressions here and there, or they've developed really well in one area or in most areas, but one area is like a little bit slower than maybe their peers, I personally wouldn't like shoot up a red flag. It's usually when you see like a global issue. And like I said before, when it's happening across the board in all these different arenas of their life, that's when I would start being like, okay, maybe there's something going on. But even something like a speech and language delay, there are so many kids that have speech and language delays, and I don't know the actual percentage, but I bet you like 80% of them, by the time they're school aged or a little older, it's not an issue if it was addressed appropriately.
Right.
But early intervention is key. So I think the biggest struggle that I deal with parents is denial. And I get it. Like I would be so upset to hear that my child had something going on with them. And I think it would take a while to process that and accept it. But the earlier you can get intervention, the outcomes are like beyond better. So, so, so much better than waiting until like, not that it's too late, but just it gets harder and harder as they get older.
Yeah, that makes sense. And that was kind of like the approach I was trying to like take with him was like, you know what, if you have something going on, if it might be as simple as a speech delay, which is what it turned out to be, or it might be more, let's get on it now. That way we like, I'm going to make you like, I am the kind of person that's like, we're going to turn this into something big for you. Like, yeah. You know, we're going to utilize this. We're going to like work with you and we're going to, you know, like make this be not a disability, but maybe something that is, you know, like you're like, it makes you special instead. And so right. That's kind of how I wanted to approach it if I needed to.
Yeah.
But yeah, he ended up being just a speech delay, which we were grateful for. But, you know, I just wanted to be prepared. And I felt like that preparation really helped me kind of like move through like all these like learning things with him and stuff. And I'm glad that we were on top of it, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Well, and one thing we always talk about with children with special needs or not is don't let the label drive the intervention. Mm-hmm. Let the needs drive the intervention. So I think what you did is taking it by step, like, okay, we see that this child has a need. Let's address the need by doing X, Y, and Z rather than worrying about like what the overarching label is, because even a child who is on the spectrum or has a learning disability or has attention issues, they can look so different, each and every kid anyway. So you really want to make sure you're addressing their specific needs. And I find that easier to do if you can forget about what it's called and just dive into what exactly do they need to make them better.
Ooh, that's a good tip.
Yeah,
that's
absolutely.
A really good tip.
I agree.
This episode of FAM is brought to you by KiwiCo. What a lifesaver KiwiCo has been for us during this cray-cray time. My kids are obsessed with these creative crates.
Well, with KiwiCo, it's a hands-on science and art project. So even, for instance, for Halloween, they have these really fun crates where your ghoulies won't go batty with boredom. I really love that that was written out for us, you guys. It's such a funny thing to say, but it's true. There is so much to do when you get your KiwiCo crates, and they're always interesting. I feel like Nikosh just loves getting one of his crates because he feels like he's independent and he can do, you know, he can do this on his own. I just have to sit there and watch him. And I've really seen him grow with each crate. And he's also excited to get the mail because a package comes for him.
How fun is it to see them get something in the mail for them that you know is going to be so great for their development and their confidence? And it's just, honestly, like, I've never been super great at coming up with new projects for my kids to do all the time. And this helps me. Mm-hmm. It honestly helps me be a better mom.
Yeah.
My kids think I'm a genius.
Yeah. Well, you
have provided this.
Exactly. You encourage your children to be innovators and creative thinkers. So I really encourage you to try out KiwiCo. It's redefining learning with hands-on projects that build confidence, creativity, and critical thinking skills. There's something for every kid or kid at heart at KiwiCo.
Get 30% off your first month plus free shipping on any crate at kiwico.com/fam. That's kiwico.com/fam.
Because I know, like with COVID, people, I know for sure, I've seen it. I know a lot of people are worried about their kids' mental health, and like kids have been regressing. I don't know if you've noticed it in your children. I have gotten a lot of input from parents about their behavior just totally going off the wall.
Yeah.
So I was going to talk about that, like,
let's
just
definitely talk
what
about
to look
that.
For and what's the difference between like a normal reaction to the situation versus something that you might want to maybe get a little more assistance with.
Right.
Yeah, definitely. Hit us with that.
Well, I also think like parents are just not wanting to go out obviously as much and take their kids anywhere, especially in the first few months, because we were all just told to really stay at home and only leave if it was like a huge emergency. So things like maybe seeing a specialist for your kid or even for yourself. I've needed to get my eyes checked and go to the damn dentist for so long and I haven't gone because I'm like, well, my arm isn't falling off, so I could so I should probably just stay home. But so this is really helpful, and I think this is going to be good for parents. So COVID behavior. Let's dive in.
Well, and I think, I'll get into like who you can ask for to help with this situation right now. But so basically the general rule of thumb I would say is always like, just watch, try to observe. And if anything is occurring for more than like 2 weeks, that's when maybe you might identify something as like a pattern versus just like a normal reaction to something. Because, you know, think about our own reaction to COVID and how we've all had a little bit of a personal journey to acceptance about it. Mm-hmm. The children are going to have the same thing. Again, it's like, they're just like us. They're going to have their way of internalizing and accepting it. So what I would look for really though is like a significant change in their personality. So some kids are already shy and quiet. So if they stay shy and quiet, it doesn't mean like, oh, they're depressed because they're not socializing. If that's just kind of how they are, then I wouldn't worry about that. But if you have a really bubbly, extroverted, social kid, and then all of a sudden they're extremely withdrawn or have no interest in social interaction, that to me would be like, okay, that's a pretty significant behavior change. I would be concerned about that. Just losing interest in things they used to love. So if they loved certain activities or certain sports or certain hobbies, and all of a sudden they have no interest in them, that is something I would look out for too. And then also those regressions, like it's one thing, for example, you know, you have 3-year-olds. My daughter has been great with potty training. And then all of a sudden last week she had like 3 accidents and I'm like, what the hell is going on? You know, this
yeah.
is, And I felt really, I didn't know how to address it because it had just never been an issue for us. So I was like, oh my God, like, is this because of COVID? Did something happen that I don't know about? You know, you go to all these dark places. But I'm talking about like a regression in behavior that would last for a long period of time, not just once or twice or a couple of times. It would have to be like a significant reverse and almost like they wouldn't get out of it. Like if they were having accidents constantly to the point where you're almost like back to where you were before potty training, then I would be concerned about that. But I would say the main thing as a parent is use your intuition. I mean, there's never harm in reaching out for help if it ends up not being anything significant.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, definitely.
But like you said, Shahrzad, like it is hard at this time because we're not in a place where it's as accessible. So what I would do though, is if you have a school aged kid, ask, usually schools have a counselor or psychologist at the school. You can always ask to be put in touch with them and then just have a conversation with them about your concerns and see what they offer. Like, for example, I worked at a private school in LA and during COVID I was working online with them and I had tons of little Zoom meetings with parents about their individual situation. And I would offer to meet with their kid a few times. Sometimes they would take me up on it and sometimes they wouldn't. But like, I don't think they even knew that I would offer that to just check in with them on Zoom, like, or on FaceTime, just a little casual, like, hey, you know, let's talk a little bit about something that happened or how you feel. So I would start with that, like, see if there's resources at your own school, even if they do it over the internet. And then, you know, there are people in the community that are doing everything online. Like I know most of my therapist friends are doing everything on Zoom or FaceTime. So
we are having a tough time with Zoom. We are just not like a Zoom family. Just, I don't know. I just don't think kids were meant to sit in front of a screen and I have such a hard time with it. And we have such minimal Zoom requirements now for my oldest, who's a first grader. But I felt like Idris was getting a little bit depressed at the end of the school year last year because he hated, I mean, and this is a bubbly life of the party kind of kid. He's just like me. He likes to entertain. He loves to make people laugh. And Zoom for him at the end of kindergarten and for me as well, you know, being his mom was such torture. I mean, he hated it. And I made the mistake of saying out loud how much I hated it too, which I felt like gave him even more authority to say like, I hate Zoom. But I agree. I hate Zoom. Like, I appreciate it, you know, and in the beginning it was like, cool, upgraded my Zoom membership. Now I can have, and I appreciate it in the beginning and I appreciate it now. For example, we get to chat with you and see your face, which is very pretty. But it's like for school aged kids to do the Zoom shit, I felt like Idris was getting depressed. And he was somebody who just is like, has a lot of friends and he didn't get to see his friends. And I kept thinking like, thank God he has his little brother to play with. But he's the type of kid that actually gravitates towards older kids and loves learning from the bigger boys. And so for him to just have his little brother all the time, I felt like he was just a little stuck. And I know, I feel like moms and dads and just any parents right now that have to put their kid on Zoom are just, they're going insane. And I don't even know what to say about it because I hate it so much. And I don't know the alternatives unless you have money to pay for a pod or to do some sort of alternative thing or have a teacher come to you. It just seems like hell. It is hell. And so I don't know. And I'm looking for these behaviors. Idris has actually been in a much better place. He's been able to see like Hendrix, your little nephew, for example, which has been so tremendously helpful to just see a kid who's closer in age to him than his little brother. And he's seen, you know, he honestly hasn't had a lot of play dates with kids his age. Very, very few. But it's hard to navigate this and look out for behaviors because, I mean, I noticed my 6-year-old was a little bit sadder and I didn't know what to do about it. And also I was sad and I understood the sadness, you know, because I was like sort of grieving the loss of our former life for the first few months. Every time we talked, it was like, trying to be positive. I'm grateful. Now I'm more relaxed and now we're like all, you know, in my little world, we're like settling into things a bit more. But yeah, I don't know what to do with him sometimes because I feel sorry for the kid. You know, when I was six, I was like soccer, gymnastics, Girl Scouts, busy, slumber parties, play dates, riding my bike, like so social. And it's just, yeah, anyway. There, I invented, felt good.
Yeah, and I think,
help me.
No, I think Zoom is super dysregulating for a lot of children. I do not like it because you're always like looking at yourself and you're like, there's just a lot of input and it can be very hard for children to process all of it. It's a little bit stressful. So, but the issue is like right now, that's just the reality. It totally sucks.
I know.
But that is how they're getting their education. But you know what? He's in first grade. So, is it the end of the world if on some days you're just not going to make it to the little morning meeting or whatever little thing they come up with? That's okay. Like you have the permission to skip out on certain things. You know, you have to know your kid and how they're going to react to that. But I've had certain kids where they just really can't handle something like a morning meeting or like a larger group of kids all kind of at once. So I've had them just elect not to attend those and check in a different way, or maybe go twice a week and not the other days, you know, find a happy medium where they're practicing doing it because you don't want them to completely be removed, but, you do have permission to ask like, hey, would it be okay if he didn't participate in this? It's just, it ends up setting off the day on a totally wrong foot. And then the rest of the day, it's like, they're impossible to get back on track. Or I've had people do it so that they're not, they take off their video. So for a lot of kids, for some reason, seeing themselves while seeing others can be like really odd. I don't know why, but they just take off their own videos. So they're able to see other people, but they don't have the distraction of themselves.
That's interesting.
I don't know.
Yeah.
That's just something you could try.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, unfortunately it's just the medium that we're using.
I know.
And I don't really know what the alternatives are when you yourself can't be a full-time teacher, which most of us can't. And then not everybody has the ability to have help at home with these kinds of things. So yeah, but I mean, like I said, if we hate it, then they're going to hate it too.
I know.
You know, I don't think many kids love it.
No,
I don't.
No, I do. I mean, you know, elementary is different, but I really, really feel for the junior high and high school kids that are doing this on Zoom. It makes me sick when I drive by one of the high schools in my neighborhood. My heart hurts because that's where, I don't know. It makes me sad.
But one thing to keep in mind, and I was going to bring this up too, is don't worry so much about them. Like we are projecting a lot of our depression and our issues onto the kids about like wearing a mask. And it's like, oh, they have to wear a mask. Poor things. You know, I think they're a lot more resilient than we think they are. And
that's true.
You know, this is just how it is right now. And at the end of the day, if they get to do certain things, but they have to wear a mask, you know, is that really so, so horrible? And I know for us, we are stuck in our ways and we've lived a much longer life with things being more normal. But for them, I think just remember, like, they may not see it the same way that we do. And so try to not kind of see it as depressing or sad when you see kids like that, because I think a lot of them are fine with the situation. I mean, they're not like pumped about it, but they're getting through.
Yeah.
You know, just like we are.
Yeah. True, 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 true. Feels good to vent sometimes.
Yeah. You need to. You need to.
Oh my gosh. I'm literally counting down the days till she can start school. And I'm so grateful that she's able to go to a school that's opening with some accommodations, obviously, or modifications, but believe me, I'm like,
I know it's really hard. It's a hard ask for the parental units, but we'll let you go. Have an awesome day. And thanks for joining us with an 8 week old. You know, we're really grateful.
Congratulations.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. He's lovely, but you know, newborns are hard. So
yeah, it was so fun to chat with you and I hope you have a wonderful day and I hope we see you soon, not via Zoom.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye.
Bye. Bye.